Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show right here on talk808.com. Thank you for listening. And you can pick us up at carol@carolcox.com, C-A-R-R-O-L-L at C-A-R-R-O-L-L-C-O-X.com is the email. Or if you want to call in, 808-782-6627. We have some interesting things to talk about today, and been doing a lot of research on the Red Hill fuel stations or facility, and so this is going to be multiple topics, but they all relate to one another. There's a situation where it has been around the public concern for the last 2014, you know, whether they disclosed, they being the Navy and other sources, disclosed that there's a fuel facility on the ground in Red Hill at the IL area going up H1. And concerns is that those tanks have leaked. The question is, how much have they leaked? But for right now, that subject has been is being dealt with, I should say, and folded and molded and to get the desired results. Just recently, the Navy put out a report that's claiming that basically it would not be feasible to double line the tanks. And so I don't know all the details. I didn't read the report. It seems that Ed Case had a copy of it or was promising a copy, and I guess he did finally send one. But as far as public information, it's rather sketchy, and there's going to be a hearing. I hadn't even memorialized the date of it. But anyway, the whole situation reeks of foot dragging, and it took the Navy from 2014, when they were open about it and supposedly, we'll say loosely, transparent, to get back to us to tell us that some 5 years later, approximately, that it wouldn't be feasible to repair the tanks and put double lining or modify them to effect. So what is feasibility? What cost are we placing on environmental health, human health, and just common sense? How much does that cost? We know that in Camp Lejeune and other places controlled by the military, they've had some horrendous results and conditions there that poses life-threatening conditions to humans and the environment there. So, got me to thinking, how did this happen? Now, we need fuel for our military machinery, and I'm all for that. You can't be in this world and while everyone else is amassing arms and weapons and what have you. So I don't want it to take that turn and start discussing what I think about the military and what have you. What I think right now is that we have a situation where some 400,000 people or more, to and counting in the tourists and visitors here, and that may be drinking water that is contaminated or water that potentially will be contaminated. And so I got to looking at the situation. Red Hill, the tank sits uphill, 12.6 million gallons capacity for each tank, 20 tanks underground. They're going to leak. The piping's going to leak eventually. Something happens. I mean, you know, age has its effect. The process that we're focusing on now that has seemed to have been glazed over and ignored or purposely kept on the back burner and concealing it in a sense, not being overt about it. They talk about the USTs, the underground storage tanks, but these tanks needed to be cleaned, and if they were leaking, they needed to be drained, and they also would generate water, mixture water, fuel would get contaminated and with other things, and so they routinely would have to clean each tank to avoid degrading the fuel oil that was being stored. So in that process, you would have wastewater, you'd have a tar-like substance, bunker C, fuel bunker 6, or bunker 3, whatever the number you want to apply to it. We had the actual sampling of it done. The state actually did a sampling, and there's, as a result of all of this, this relationship between the Red Hill facility, you got to process the waste. Well, there's no facility here to dispose of the waste, or so you should ship it out. Well, they weren't shipping much of it out, so what they did was build oily pits. We'll call them oily pits, and just for purpose, they recognize it as the Red Hill Oily Waste Disposal Facility. So we'll get loose with the name and call it oily pits or what have you. But the reality is this is a critical part of managing and maintaining these tanks that are underground, containing some 12.6 million gallons of fuel. Now, these tanks, this facility, this disposal facility, did not have a geotextile lining. They were just pits dug in the ground, and some were later asphalt was placed in them. But then asphalt is pervious, and also it couldn't contain. So my concern is, rightfully so, this facility has some very interesting components. There's an 8,000 gallon above ground storage tank that has leaked. There are instances of materials that have been intentionally dumped in the streams, dumped in the Halava streams, both South and North Fork. There's been at least a million gallons of oil spill up there at this facility that goes unaccounted for. But I want to read for starch. This is we call it Halava, but the reality is it's IEA Halava. So Halava Industrial Park, if you're familiar with this area, it's the state quarantine facility as well. So this material gives you an idea of this oily waste facility. Look at some of the basic impacts. Now, I'm just gleaning from, this is a review on comments on the draft phase one remedial investigation report. Now, while we're all focused on the Red Hill tanks and they're possibly leaking, might be leaking, have leaked, we don't know, back and forth, the exchange. But the real culprit here, just equally responsible for the contaminants in the water and the threats to the drinking water and the aquifer that's situated beneath these two facilities. So here's a general comment, section 5, contaminant fate and transport. This section employs the use of simple analytical models to evaluate leaching of contaminants into the basal aquifer approximately 100 feet below ground, or BGS, below ground surface. It appears the modeling results were used to justify installation of groundwater monitoring wells in this aquifer. Given the site analytical data that shows perched groundwater beneath the site has been impacted by contaminants, that contaminant level and the soil are elevated TPH up to 27,000 milligrams per kilogram, and that contaminants have migrated vertically to the investigation. Total depth of approximately 45 feet below ground surface. It is unclear why modeling was necessary to support the decision for installation of groundwater monitoring wells. The data collected at the site are sufficient to identify this need. Based on the site conditions, groundwater monitoring wells are necessary to evaluate the current impact on groundwater and also provide warning of any impacts in the future. Subsequent to collection of the groundwater samples, models can be used to predict the future impacts on groundwater. Additionally, Vadose zone or leaching models can be used as a decision tool to help determine the level of contaminants that can be left in the Vadose zone, which will most likely not impact groundwater in the future. I read you that because contaminants from this operating facility, the oily waste pit, is situated on and above the aquifer that we're worried about. And you hear that some of it has been hit by perch water. The perch water there under the ground has been impacted. Now, that was 45 feet. Now, this report goes back to 2004 or 5 or whatever. They're very loose with the dates. But anyway, this begs the question, why is there not any emphasis or any real concerns placed on, had with the oily waste permit? So this is the area that I told you was in Halava industrial site, industrial park. So what I want to do is shift gears here for a bit. Excuse me. So what's the culture? How is it that we can find reports like this that lends themselves to suggesting that we're a little too loose with the environmental issues and concerns here, and we are a little cavalier, we being the military and the state health department. If the state health department, this is a report to them by the Navy, then the state should be more aggressive, and instead of partnering up with the Navy, I'm not saying throwing knives at one another, but we need a regulatory body, and we need a relationship where the regulator is regulating rather than dating or hanging out and keeping the public in the dark. This is RCRA. And we have a right to know, but for some reason, there's no real emphasis put on the protection and the impacts, or trying to avoid the impacts. And so I decided to look around and ask myself and try to find documentation that would lend itself to lending an explanation, at least, why are we so loose and so casual and cavalier about this in this major issue? This is a major, major issue. And so I thought, well, let's see how the state health department behaves and also state agencies behave that occupy that property. So I found a copy. This is where DDT, malathion, and some other chemicals hazardous chemicals, the poisons, were disposed of and handled. So this is dated 11/3/1994. This situated right in the same area above the aquifer that we're worried about being impacted by Red Hill fuel facility. So the medium priority category, potential release of a Class A groundwater or release to Class B groundwater. This is a site screening sheet that was filled out in 11/3/1994 by the state. Site recommendation, malathion and tomato dust disposed of according to levels registered to the acceptance and procedures of the disposal service May 1994, DDT waste taken by Unitec. Now keep that in mind. DDT is involved and they are claiming that it was taken away by Unitec. Then they go on to say the justification. Actions taken by DOA was in accordance with federal regulations. And let's stop right there. Throughout this whole process, you'll read these documents and you'll see. It comes within the state levels. It comes, it's below the state level of concern, or it's significantly lower. But the question is, we're talking about drinking water. And in that being the case, why are we having any contaminants in the water? While many of them deny and say, well, we have monitoring wells to tell, but these documents don't lie. These are their own documents, so they're telling us one thing, but the documents say another. Or they may hint around the edges that there's some contaminants or some threat. But they don't come out and disclose to you and say, look, you want to see the real picture, see the real impacts, and these are from 2000, so only know how much has percolated and contaminated. And I don't believe they're giving us the right answers and the right test results. I don't trust them because they are, some of the reports that we got, is just rather Dr. Strangelove must have written them, because it just does not come out and clearly say it's beating around the bush. And then later on, I'll talk about that in this show with others. But this pesticide burial does not pose a hazard to the environment at the present time. Can you imagine? Pesticide disposal does not pose a threat at this time. But sooner or later, these containers that they're buried in, or we get heavy rains, things will change. And this is still yet sitting above the aquifer that we're using to drink from. Initial recommendations for the further action, no further action at this time. So this is regarding the malathion, DDT. So, again, now, these are state officials, state employees, and sitting on the same mountain right next door, some 50 feet away, and in fact, this property that they situated on was previously owned by the military, either the Coast Guard or the Navy or the United States Army. So here's a 1980 letter, and I'm going back in time to try and show the mindset and the mentality. Why, when we look at these old reports and we see the new developments, why we should be very leery of accepting any part of it or all of it. Because the way they behave is telling, the way they so loosely handle contaminants. Here's a letter, 1980 March 18th to Dr. Po Young Lai. That's L-A-I, not L-I-E, because the others would probably just lie, but this is his legal name. Acting Chief of Pesticides Branch. And it's from Hector Matsuda and Dean Yoshizu, pesticides inspectors. Disposal and storage of pesticides. On March 6, 1980, inspectors Hector Matsuda and Dean Yoshizu inspected the Department of Agriculture Animal Quarantine Station at Halava. This inspection was a follow-up of Keith Takata's referral last dated January 14, 1980. At the station, the inspectors Matsuda and Yoshizu were met by Robert D. Gould, assistant superintendent. The result of the visit with Mr. Gould follows. The site selection where the pesticides were buried was made only after lengthy consultation with Stanley Tanaka, former pesticide supervisor and EPA inspector. The size of the underground oblilet was mentioned to be the size of a 7-foot cube. The quantity of the pesticides that were disposed of into the underground area was approximately 2.5 feet in height prior to refilling and compacting the soil aggregates. No one could recall the types of pesticides that were buried. Now, understand this now. We're worried about the impacts of water on water, drinking water, by the Red Hill facility, which sits up on the hill above the quarantine station where this action is taken. And then we are talking about the oily waste pit facility, disposal facility, that sits right adjacent to, almost at the same elevation as the quarantine station. So we're concerned about the impacts on water, drinking water, from those two facilities. But we abandon any concern, it appears, that we would be burying pesticides in unknown types and quantities. No water well or river could be located in the proximity where the pesticides were buried. Now, Halava Stream wraps around it, and then we also have the North and South Fork. But they say that no river could be located in the proximity. In the proximity, the pesticides were buried. However, a 75,000-gallon water tower was located approximately 150 yards to the southwest. The storage of pesticides included the following. 3 55-gallon steel drums filled with RTU, 10% DDT, manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. A 6 5-gallon drums of 10% DDT was also buried. Now, somewhere up there, and this is taking place in 1980, this letter, somewhere up there right now is a source of leaching and an activity occurring of DDT, malathion, tomato dust, and other unknown pesticides are being used and or have been disposed of and placed there. And the funny thing is, when you see the documents that would identify it now, it just shows a picture that is illegible, a little hand-drawn map. But we do know that this facility is above the drinking water. He goes on to say, this is to Dr. Lyle Wong in 1980, Chief Pesticides Branch. My disposal site inspections are hereby submitted. However, item number one, Keith Tatala memo, Hawaii Trip Report Hazardous Waste Task Force, was not completed as itemized due to federal agencies' public works requiring 30 days advance notice prior to any inspection conducted by us. So when people want to work, the rules and the in-house rules become crippling. A brief highlight of each disposal site inspection follows. And I'm going to read through these, but again, it's going to take us away from some of the Red Hill facilities. But I want to illustrate that why I believe that we should be more aggressive in demanding and asking for much, much more from the Navy. Because when we see the behavior of the state and what was permitted and just the general practices, I think we are basically giving too much liberty to people that have our health and welfare in concern. So a brief highlight of each disposal site inspection follows. The Diamond Head Crater, operated by the State Department of Defense and Health. Here we found technical DDT, a little more heavier duty grade, as well as RTU DDT. That's a 10% DDT for household and commercial uses, so you and I can buy it in a box, a powder box, and spread it out for fleas, ticks, and lice, and what have you. As well as RTU DDT in broken down sacks. And Paris green copper acetocyanate in corroded containers intermingled and adjacently stored with emergency medical supplies. Now these are the people that protects us, that monitors us, that when they give their formal opinion, these are the departments historically. So if they're behaving in this way, should we be concerned? We should, if I may suggest, take it with a grain of salt and be more aggressive in demanding a more stringent test and qualification of these people. So Brewer Chemical Company at Honolulu branch, here we found 630 pounds of DBCP. Enclosed in plastic bags and 1 5-gallon drum of Nemagon packed and ready for disposal by any means available. You hear that? This chemicals, deadly substances, were packed and ready, loosely just laying around, and would be ready for any disposal of any means possible or any means available. How about that? Now, these are the professional people that has your faith and my faith in their hands. Now, Bob Bosch received word from AMVAC CO that they were accepting 630 pounds of DBCP granular. Dole Company was able to take the 5-gallon drum of Nemagon for their own use. Therefore, no problem exists now at Brewer Chemical Company. Brewer Chemical Company in Ever Beach. Now, I'm reading from documents that we recovered from the state health department's files. And we're just reading them out to you. So if you have a question and you wish to see these, give me a call or send me an email at carol@carolcox.com. I'd be more than happy to share you a copy or everything we have. You provide the thumb drive and we'll get the rest to you. Now, Brewer Chemical Company in Ever Beach. Previous pollution from disposed pesticides in the coral rock cavities on the other side of Brewer Chemical's property not observed. These rock cavities in the coral beds were observed to be filled with water that had active green algae taking place. Brewer Chemical Company has made a large sump, about 25,000 square feet, that seems to be able to intercept all of their pesticide waste. So somewhere in Ever Beach, there is, as you've heard, a 25,000 square foot pit, quote, that seems to be able to intercept all of their pesticide waste, end quote. The Department of Health Vector Control Branch, another state agency involved, it seems as though DOH Vector Control has an adequate storage and disposal facility, but any careless handling resulting in a spillage may create a hazardous situation due to a live stream that runs about 25 feet along the back of this building. Now, where is that? Vector Control Branch. Is that in Halava? Because remember, early on it said in the dust, the guy reported that there was no source of water, a river or stream that would be impacted. But here, 25 feet along the back of the building. No pesticide, Occidental Chemical Company, no pesticide disposal problem. Department of Land and Natural Resources, Division of Forestry, previous pesticide problem was alleviated by disposing of methyl bromide in glass vials to the University of Hawaii. No problem exists today. Department of Agriculture, Division of Animal Industry, Animal Quarantine Branch. No pesticides problem exists because unwanted pesticides were disposed by burying them in a 7-foot cubic hole on their grounds in accordance with EPA regulations for acceptance and recommended procedures for disposal and storage of May 1, 1976. Again, here's that word, in accordance with EPA regulations. Folks, that's going to get us in trouble, or has gotten us into trouble, because we're in high grass now, but we did everything according to EPA standards. Now, I understand that a lot of these things we know them as we grow them, our problems that we create, and so we don't have the ability to foresee or look into the future what these, I'm doing this to show you why we should go back and question this entire process, to include Red Hill, to include the disposal, oily waste facility disposal, and the quarantine station, because this is coming from the same area, and everything that we're accepting from them raises concerns. And it shows that if they're callous or loosely operating over here with chemicals, you think we're going to get any strengthened policies or practices or rules when the normal process was, hey, just get rid of it. Now, Honolulu Wood Treating Company in Ever Beach, Their solid and liquid pesticide waste are now stored in steel drums for future disposal. Maui Land Company, Gas Pro, no disposal problems could be. Now there is one caught my attention. But the Department of Transportation Highways, no old pesticides were observed during our inspection. Therefore, no problems are assumed to exist. Now, no pesticides were observed during our inspection. Didn't say we interviewed them to find out if they had any, or it just says, therefore, no problems are assumed to exist. Dole Company in Wahiawa. Dole Company uses the Mililani landfill as their primary disposal facility for all their pesticides waste. I have no knowledge of any apparent serious problems that exist as a result of about 674 drums, 30 gallons and 55 gallon empty EDB steel drums crushed and buried there recently to alleviate any pesticide problems as a result of burying. The company will initiate using bulk steel cylinders commencing early 1981. That's very interesting because containers, steel drums and what have you, iron drums or whatever, they're tin drums. You have residue, number one, and much of this is impregnated in the cans, in the metal itself, as it stores the chemicals. And some of the practices, I don't know about you, but I'm familiar with people that would take cans of 5 gallon drums, 55 gallon drums, a small one, 5 gallons, whatever, and would actually make barbecue pits out of them. And in doing so, the high heat would trigger the carcinogens and what have you, and the chemicals that were originally stored in there, the residual, even if you triple washed them. You shouldn't use any barrels, but I don't think with the price of Weber's nowadays, people aren't making their own. But if you are inclined, make sure you don't use these things. So here's some of the feasibility of soil disposal for suspended and or unusable pesticides. You had concerns with atrazine, bromosil, CDAA, chlorobin, 2,4-D, dicamba, diquat, diuron, EPTC, and on. Captan, dodine, meneb, bromide, methyl bromide, and the degradation of selected pesticides in soil, a review of the published, they provided that. So, again, this may not sound relevant, but I hope to convey to you, this is the mindset and this is the way business was done back then. And so back then presented in us with results of tests and studies and half-assed studies, so-called, where in one instance, they were testing for and sampling for and exploring to try and find, determine what is the source of the oil that is bubbling in the parking lot at Department of Land and Natural Resources land in Halawa. But all they say is that they actually indict the oily waste facility by saying up slope is a source, but they don't name the source. They just say a source upslope. So this is the kind of things that causes great alarm. On 28 December, this is written 28 December 1983, Daniel Change contacted Charles Middleton, animal quarantine manager at the Halawa Animal Quarantine Station, to explain that the Department of Health conducted a preliminary assessment of their facility on the RCRA 3012 program. Mr. Chang then requested some information that was required on the preliminary assessment in regards to the landowner. Mr. Middleton indicated that the property was owned by the state of Hawaii and the facility operated by the Department of Agriculture. Let me speak to that. There is a practice, and we've talked about it and tried to explain it over and over and over again, but here's yet another. Let's gravitate back to that point. The state agencies are complicit in a major cover-up. When the military has property and that property is used and they decide to close it, it becomes a FUDS, formerly used defense site. That being the case, if it qualifies, it constitutes, it must be cleaned. You just can't leave it there. As you recall, the Voice of America facility up in Waianae, Miley, where we chased them around and the PCBs were just left there and they had a struggling to spend $8 million to clean it up, but finally they did. Well, how does one avoid paying a cleanup fee? Well, there's this game in town, a very deadly game. And this game is played by the State Health Department, the City and County of Honolulu, the United States Navy, United States Army, United States Air Force. And it's perpetrated against the people of the United States throughout the nation. And I'm not a quack. You see, if you bought land from a private individual, a transaction occurred, you have a responsibility of disclosing certain types of chemicals, certain types of hazards. And if you don't disclose them and they present themselves later, you might find yourself being sued. But what if you were the Army and the Navy and the Air Force and the Marines, and you had a player willing to be complicit in this game at the state government level and at the city and county government level, that they would cover the front door for you, so to speak, accept the land without any cleanups or any thorough cleanups. Sometimes they do a cursory, and sometimes they just walk away. And then hand that land over to, let's say, the state agriculture department. Now, we've just learned that the land where the bubbling of the oil is, in 2011, it became in the possession of the Department of Land and Natural Resources. But prior to that, it was the Department of Agriculture, I think. I can't recall exact, but we have the documents. So imagine, the Navy gets to pollute, the military gets to pollute, and instead of cleaning it up, you end up putting a quarantine station on it, so the public is not going to be able to come in there and just loosely walk around and discover anything. There are not going to be any surveys or sampling or cleanups. They just add to the problem. So this is a grand scheme. And so imagine you're being the military and you have a practice that pollutes and contaminate drinking water or the surrounding environment. You don't report it. You lie about it. You conceal it. You have technical reports written, but it's a game. And then when you find that your contaminants have impacted the environment to such a gotten on the loose in the environment, and the levels were, let's say, 10 parts per milligram per kilogram was a concern level. Well, your work, your behavior that you performed on that property and your usage of that property showed that the property is being used illegally. No FUDs. And in the Red Hill matter and the Halava matter, no FUDs were, no documents that identified it as a FUDs. So what a great situation to be in that you can pollute, and then the body that you rely on one hand, they're saying, look, we own this land. The United States government is a sovereign entity. So therefore, the state has no authority to come on our property and regulate anything. But we'll play the game as long as you don't become aggressive. If we see one aggressive streak or trait in you, then we will cancel our relationship with you and bar you from coming onto the property. So there's a relationship amongst the state agencies, State Health Department, DLNR, that Big Brother says, no, you will not go on my property, so stay off. But Big Brother then say, well, you know, we have these problems. We need you to cover for us. And then the state covers for you. And then the state says, well, we can't do anything because we don't have any money. It costs a lot of money to regulate and to inspect and all. But then you see the state agencies being cut and the number of inspectors being dwindled down to one or two, quite inadequate coverage. I know that it's often you probably hear people talking and they're conspiracy theorists. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is just right on the money, on the button talk. Case in point, you look at YPO Caves. That facility was destined, if being once it was abandoned, we'll use the term abandoned, by the Navy, then that facility was going to be transferred over. The federal government didn't want it. No federal agency wanted it. The state declined, and the city opted to take it. And they were going to make a recreational area, adding to our parks. Mufi Hanneman changed that, and today we have a commercial entity's actions down there in the canyon. No public lands generated. And we have the documents where more than 10 years, Department of Planning and Permitting inspectors actually were involved in giving opinions and giving descriptions and also going to the city council to get this land. And just someone pulled the plug. So that's the nature of this beast. So Mr. Chang then explained the letter that I was reading in 1983. He explained to Mr. Middleton that the information that was presently known about the buried pesticides and the stored DDT, and asked Mr. Middleton if the information was correct and if he could add any other information regarding the matter. Mr. Middleton then explained that the burial pit was a pit that was made by backhoeing a 7x7x2 area. The pesticides was then placed into a pit and covered. Mr. Middleton stated that the pesticides were biodegradable and that he did not know the quantity of the pesticides that were buried. In regards to the 10% DDT, Mr. Middleton indicated that it was shipped to the mainland for disposal by a contractor. At the end of the phone conversation, Mr. Chang made arrangements to. So he also went there and he indicated that the pesticide had belonged to the Department of Agriculture pesticide branch and that the burial was supervised by the pesticide branch. The area surrounding the pit is currently being used to raise a few heads of cattle. However, Mr. Middleton indicated that the area may possibly be used to put kennels in the future. Due to the proposed H3 freeway, which would bisect the property, the pit area will not be dug up except if sewers for kennel facilities have to be installed in the area. In regards to DDT waste, Mr. Middleton indicated that the company Unitech, he did not know the exact name of the company, handled the disposal of the DDT and shipped it to Oregon. This gentleman also went ahead and asked for the DDT history, and he stopped by Unitech Environmental Services after the site visit to the Halawa Animal Quarantine Station. Mr. Ching met with Mr. Harrell, and inquired about the disposal of DDT waste from the Department of Agriculture Halawa Animal Quarantine Station. Mr. Harrell indicated that he recalled picking up some waste from the Department of Agriculture and that he would check their records to make sure. A copy of the manifest for the DDT waste from the Halawa Animal Quarantine Station was later obtained from Mr. Harrell. Daniel Chang, conversation with the supervisor, Brian Choi, inquired that the control of state Hawaii-owned lands, Mr. Choi, if the land owned by the state and being used by various departments, whether the owner of the land is the jurisdiction of the department, Mr. Choi informed Mr. Chang that state land is listed and controlled by the Department of Land and Natural Resources. I do apologize if this sounds loose and unimportant or vague, but again, these are the professionals. These are people that generated reports. We're now relying on their reports and their studies and their surveys and their interviews to deal with this monstrous problem called Red Hill Fuel Facility. It's quite relevant. If you want to know why we have such poorly planned response, they changed their well names and what have you. Some indications, letters indicate that they didn't have the wells in the right place or had wells in the wrong place. We do know that the groundwater has been contaminated, and we do know that the constituents or contaminants of concern, the VOCs or COPCs or what have you, have been found to be at 45 feet below ground surface. And everybody involved sings Kumbaya. Now, you heard me talk about DDT, and I just want to, this is stuff that was buried up there, and forget buried. DDT was sprayed up there. Why were they in possession of DDT? Well, we know historically DDT was had some tremendous impacts on the environment, causing the thinning of eggshells so that when pelicans or other birds that found themselves hatching or laying and trying to incubate eggs, their weight from their bodies would crack the egg or break the egg or destroy the egg, whereas normally the egg would be strong enough and just the natural design, evolutionary process have allowed for an egg to be a certain density or a certain thickness or shape and would support and stand up to an adult bird sitting on it trying to incubate. We don't hear much. We hear them say, well, the fuel oil. Well, they sprayed routinely up in that area with DDT to control lice, fleas, ticks. And DDT was also used by military for malaria. And so let's just see what DDT affects the nervous system by interfering with normal nerve impulses. DDT causes the nerve cells to repeatedly generate an impulse, which accounts for the normal nerve imp- repetitive body tremors seen in exposed animals. How toxic is DDT? DDT is slightly to moderately acutely toxic to mammals, including humans. When ingested, see box on laboratory testing. Common measure to toxicity is a lethal dose or lethal concentration of LC50. One acute toxicity study found that DDT is slightly toxic if absorbed through the skin. The acute dermal LD50 rat ratio is 2,500 to 3,000 milligrams per kilogram. DDT is poorly absorbed through human mammalian skin, but it is easily absorbed through the insect's exoskeleton. So that's why they were using it. And laboratory animals exposed to a single multiple dose of DDT develop hyperexcitability, tremors, incoordination, and convulsions. Death results from respiratory or heart failure. Animals giving potentially fatal doses of DDT develop liver lesions. Mice, rats, and fed low doses of 0 to 2 for mice of DDT over an extended period of time develop liver changes, including hepatocellular margination and formation of lipospheres. Humans, people excessively exposed to DDT while working with the chemical or accidentally exposure report prickling sensation of the mouth, nausea, dizziness, confusion, headache, lethargy, incoordination, vomiting, fatigue, tremors in the extremities, anorexia, anemia, muscular weakness, hyperexcitability, anxiety, and nervous tension. It was canceled because of concerns over carcinogenic bioaccumulations and health effects on wildlife. In addition, these concerns, resistance to DDT occurs in some insects, like houseflies, that develop the ability to quickly mobilize or metabolize DDT into the lower toxicity breakdown product, DDE. So, again, went out on a wild goose chase, it may seem, but I want to attempt to convey to you once again that what you hear and what you're being told has a poor foundation. We have documents that conflict and contradicts between agencies. We have documents that say that it's this level, it exceeds the level that the state has set, and yet the state then say, well, no problem, we'll take care of that, we'll raise the levels. So if you are inclined to get involved or do care about the Red Hill Field Facility, give it some thought and ask them, are we getting the true story or are we getting your story? Again, thank you for joining me. This is Carol Cox on talk808.com. We'll talk to you later. Aloha.